Scriptures in front of you, you're going to want to be in Nehemiah 5. That's where we're parking this morning. The world is divided into two groups of people, those who love the Lord of the Rings and those who should. Did you know this? Amen, Randy, right? Okay, awesome. I got one person on my side. The Lord of the Rings has a situation very similar to the situation we're actually looking at this morning in Nehemiah 5. Near the climax of these books, in book 3, The Return of the King, right near the end, there's this huge battle that takes place. The enemies of Mordor are surrounding a city called Minas Tirith, which is the capital city of the realm of Gondor. And they are attacking the city. There are these huge walls, so you can see the walls in that picture. All in front of them in that picture, that's just an army, and then you can see these big ramparts that they're building to try and get over the wall. So they are attacking the city. There's a siege taking place. And at the same time, there's stuff happening inside as well. There's trouble brewing inside of a very different nature. Lord Denethor, the man who is ruling the city at the time, is losing his mind. He's literally going mad. And he's already lost one son in battle, and now his second son, his only other son, has been injured, and he's falling really sick. And Denethor is going out of his mind, and he thinks, this is all over. We are about to be defeated. I'm going to get out the easy way. And he plans a murder-suicide. He plans to take his son with him. He's going out of his mind. And so as a result of the leadership sort of falling apart inside the city, there's trouble going on throughout the city as a result because people don't know who's in charge anymore. There's this internal bleeding that is happening as a result because the city is in chaos both outside and inside. And in the same way, that's what's happening in Nehemiah this morning. If you were here last week we were talking about how there are enemies surrounding the city while Nehemiah is trying to get this wall built with the people. And then in our chapter today, we see that while that is happening, there is a very different sort of problem happening inside. There's internal bleeding in this community, and that's what we're looking at this morning. So if you remember from last week, this is what Nehemiah said at the end of his chapter 4. He says, "We labored at the work on the wall, and half of my men held their spears from break of dawn until the stars came out at night. And I said to the people from that time, 'Let every man and his servants pass the night inside Jerusalem so that they can guard it for us. They can be a guard for us by night and so that they can labor at the wall during the day.' So neither I nor my servants nor men, nor the men of the guard who followed me, we never even took off our clothes, we said. We were constantly vigilant because we were guarding the place and we were building the place at the same time." That's what's happening in chapter 4. And then we find out that there are these internal problems in chapter 5 that we're looking at today. This passage follows right on the heels of that one. The people of the city come to Nehemiah while Nehemiah is hard at work at the wall. And they come to him and they tell him, Nehemiah is obviously aware that there is a famine happening. You heard that read in the text. There's a famine. And the result, think about what the results of a famine would be in a society that has just getting started. And it's an agricultural society. This is their economy. That's what it's based on. And there's a famine. What do you think happens to these people? There's no money for them to buy food. There's no money until harvest time comes because they're farmers. And they can't harvest if they're busy building a wall, can they? And then on top of that, in our passage, it mentions that the king's tax has been imposed on them. So the Persian emperor has imposed tax on them. So there are these heavy burdens. They can't buy enough food to feed their families. There's this tax thing happening. They can't harvest because they're building the wall. The enemies are all around. Like, there's trouble outside and there's trouble inside. That's the situation that Nehemiah is facing here. And the people are in deep trouble. They say that we've got no food and we've got no money. And what that means is that they have two assets left. They have their land. And so what they're doing is they're borrowing money against their land to hold them over so that they can buy food until harvest time. They're mortgaging their fields. But they're going into debt as they're doing that because the people who are lending them money are lending them money at an incredible rate of interest. So these people are incurring further debts while they are unable to make money. And then they have one more asset. What is that other asset? Children. That's right. Children are, did you know this? Children are a renewable resource. That's what I've told my kid. Don't act up. You are a renewable resource. It would really solve our problems here, right? When it comes to summer ministry, these people are selling their children into slavery. We could build our building and solve our volunteer problem with we don't have enough people to do our children's church. This is a solution, perhaps. No, seriously, these people are so desperate that they are realizing that they've got to mortgage their fields and then they are selling the only thing that they have left. They have to sell their children into slavery. And the children are going first because if they sell children into slavery, come harvest time, the hope is that they will have enough money to buy them back. But if they sell their fields first, then they have no more income at all. And they can't buy their kids back. This is the kind of desperate strait that these people are in. They're being charged interest based on... They're being charged a ridiculous amount of interest by their creditors, who are their brothers and sisters. And this is the complaint that they are bringing to Nehemiah. They're borrowing against the collateral of land and children. And some of the creditors are knocking, and they want their money back. What do you do? The bills are piling up, the creditors are calling, repo's in the driveway, taking the car, the locksmith is on the front porch, because the bank has called and said, change the locks and evict those people. That's the situation that the people are bringing to Nehemiah. As if it's not enough that he's got to deal with the enemies in the wall. This is what's happening inside. Have you ever noticed that crisis brings out both the best and the worst in people? We saw this recently with Fort Mac, didn't we? The beast tears through Fort Mac, and we see people who are piling in other people into their cars to get them out because some people have abandoned their cars on the side of the road. And so cars are taking twice as many people as they can handle to get people out, right? You see that kind of compassion happening. You see people with the guys with the big trucks with the extra gas tanks in the back, and they're going along filling people up because they were abandoning their cars and they couldn't get out. But then at the same time, you see other people. Have you heard about the other people who are going by saying, yeah, you need gas? It's going to cost you extra. Right? I heard some of those stories, and I'm sure you did too. Some people use crisis to line their pockets. And that's what's happening in the case of Nehemiah here, in the case of the situation in the book of Nehemiah here. There's a chance to make a really quick buck because someone is in a really tight spot. And these people are desperate and they start crying out. And I don't know if you recognize that language, that the people cried out, but that comes from the book of Exodus. Because the people cried out in Exodus and God heard their oppression. The Israelites cried out, and the rich people here in Nehemiah have become just like those Egyptian slave masters. They're selling the people into slavery. They're putting burdens on them. Have they not already learned from their past? Haven't we been in Egypt already? Don't we remember what that was like? Well, apparently they don't. Apparently it's a little bit better just to make a few extra bucks. And what makes it worse, what makes this situation worse, is that they're selling their brothers and their sisters out. They're charging them interest, they're sending them into debt, and they're selling them into slavery. There's no social safety net in this culture. They don't have EI. They don't have welfare. They don't have Red Cross, right? And that's what makes this situation so painful for them, is it's their brothers and their sisters who are selling them into slavery. Because the Jewish people are a family, just like the church is a family, right? Father Abraham had many... And many sons said, Father Abraham, and I am one of them, and so are you. And that is what they're thinking about here. Our brothers and sisters are selling us into slavery. Our brothers and sisters are gouging us. The only safety net that these people have is the compassion of a brother or a sister. We are each other's safety net. Okay? Right? You're mine, and I'm yours. That's how this thing works. That's the way God designed it to be. I'll tell you a story. One day, God is out. He's been having a nice stroll in the park, and he thinks, I'm going to look up my friend. And he's like, he knows that his friend lives just a little ways down outside the park. And so he walks down the street and he knocks on his friend's door and he can't find him. So he goes to his friend's place of work. He's looking for him there, looking around, can't find him. And he thinks, oh, I'll go and I'll look and I'll ask his brother if he knows where he is. So he goes and he knocks on his friend's brother's door. And the brother says, am I my brother's keeper? When God asks where he is, am I my brother's keeper? Who asks that? Cain. When he asks, am I my brother's keeper? There is a resounding yes in answer to that question that is implied in that text. He should have known that based on the fact that God knocked on his door. We are our brother's keeper. That's part of being a family. The Jews have a social security net. God gave them one, and it's called each other. And the same goes for us. So what Nehemiah does is he gathers all of the leaders together when he finds out that this is happening. And he calls them out on the carpet. He says, you guys are abusing your people. You can't do this. He says, you're charging these people this crazy interest. You're sending them into debt. You're selling them into slavery. How can you do that? Look at verse 8. Look what he says. Nehemiah says, as far as we have been able, we've bought back our Jewish brothers and sisters from the slavery they were already sold into with the Gentiles. But now you're selling your own kin, your own brothers and sisters into slavery, and then we've got to buy them back again. What are you, like, this is literally insane. What are you doing? He says. Verse 9, should you not walk in the fear of our God? Moreover, I and my brothers and my servants, we're already lending these people money and grain. So let's stop taking the interest. Let's stop sending these people further into debt. Now, maybe just a footnote here. I read four commentators this week that said that they think that Nehemiah was one of the people that are charging them interest, and Nehemiah was just not aware of the problem that was that he was incurring with that. I don't know whether or not that's true. I actually don't think so. But if I'm not going to go into that now because it would take us too far afield. But if you want to find out more about that, you can talk to me afterwards. I don't think Nehemiah is part of the problem. And I can ground that in the text, but I don't want to do so now because it would take us away from where we are going. So Nehemiah continues. He says to these nobles that he's called out, he says, restore to these people this very day their fields and their vineyards and their olive orchards and their houses and their interest on the money you've charged them or you've loaned them. Restore to them the grain and the wine and the oil that you have been taking from them. Nehemiah's got a pretty simple solution. This isn't about making another buck. It's about giving people the gifts that they need to meet the needs that they have. Further, Nehemiah says in verse 9, this thing could have been avoided. This thing could have been avoided. Imagine that there is an emperor, and the emperor builds, he's got his capital city, and he erects a statue of himself in that city. Okay? You see a picture like that on the screen. The emperor puts a statue of himself in that city. And imagine someone comes along at night and they put a chain around that statue and they pull it down. Then what they do is they cut off its head and they peel out of there. How do you think that emperor is going to feel about that? Do you think that emperor is going to take that personally? Probably. Okay? Well, that is what's happening when the Bible talks about you and I being made in the image of God. You and I are little statues of God. That's what the image language means. We are little mobile, moving statues of God. We represent God to the rest of the people who are watching us. Every person is made in God's image, and we get to represent God to every person that we meet and them to us. And when we deface that image, when we pull that statue down, God is saying, I take that really, really personally because you are made in my image. And if you would do that to the statue, you would do that to me. Nehemiah says, this thing could have been avoided if you had had respect for God himself. He puts his finger on the problem. The finger on the problem, the problem itself is that these people don't respect God enough. The text calls this the fear of God, fear of the Lord. It's just another, it's a fancy biblical way of talking about respect for God. If you actually respected God, you would have looked after the people who are made in his image. That's what Nehemiah is saying here. This whole thing could have been avoided. The way that we treat people indicates how we treat God, how we would treat God. And God takes it just as personally whether you do it to someone else or whether you do it to him. That is why when we go and bless someone else, God takes that really personally too, and he credits that to you. That's why Nehemiah is so concerned about taking care of people, because Nehemiah himself has a great deal of respect for God. Now, the story moves on. Nehemiah gets promoted to governor. And here is how that respect for God plays out in his new role. Look at starting at verse 14. Nehemiah has not only not acted like the nobles that he called out on the carpet, but he will actually go above and beyond what anything that they have done, because he won't even use the legal rights that he now has as governor to his own advantage. Look at verse 15. The former governors, Nehemiah says, who were before me, they laid heavy burdens on these people, and they took food and wine from them, besides 40 shekels of silver. Even their servants, even these governors' servants, lorded it over the people. But I did not do so, he says. And he says, I did not do so because I respected God. Look at verse 18. I didn't even demand the food allowance that was part of my salary as a governor, because I knew that this people had a heavy burden to bear. Nehemiah fears God. He says so explicitly in verse 15. And so he waives his bonus, he waives his salary, he waives his expense account, he waives all the things that he could have used to his own advantage, because if he'd taken them, it would have placed further burdens on these people. And he's not about to do that, because people are made in God's image. The people didn't need another oppressor. What the people needed was a brother. And Nehemiah is a God-fearing brother to these people. You'll see this on the screen. One commentator notes, he, speaking of Nehemiah, reveals his twofold motivation. First, reverence for God, respect for God, which restrained him from lording it over the people. And second, brotherly compassion, because the servitude was heavy on this people. They were burdened already. Nehemiah, he says, exemplified the two great commandments. Love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And that's what Nehemiah is doing 500 years before Jesus puts those two things together. This is what it's going to take for this community to survive. This fledgling community with the enemies around them, the wall trying to be built, and now this internal bleeding that's happening. These enemies are going to win if they continue to bleed internally. There will be no one left for the wall to protect if they don't deal with the brotherly stuff inside. And if there is internal bleeding in any community, the answer to that is respect for God and compassion for our brothers and sisters in need. But this part of the story has a happy ending. The people actually follow Nehemiah's advice. They give back the money. They give back the land. They don't charge people the interest, and they give that money back as well. And then we see that they release the slaves. The wall gets built. That happens in chapter 6, in spite of actually further attempts on Nehemiah's life. There's an assassination attempt that happens in verse 6. And they get beyond that. They deal with the enemies. They get the wall built. And by the end of this part of the story, this community is healthier, not just because they dealt with the wall and because they dealt with the enemies, but because they dealt with the internal difficulties as well. Because this people realized that I actually am my brother's keeper. The people start to look after one another. And by chapter 7, you see that Nehemiah is then able to hand over the reins of the city, control of the city, to one of his deputies, because things have started running the way that they should be. Because they were functioning the way that they should be. Because people were being taken care of inside, as well as dealing with the external difficulties as well. My dear brothers and sisters, I hope that we can see this happen here. I have seen glimpses of this happening here. I have seen the way our seniors groups in particular, our seniors group takes incredible care of one another, far above and beyond the call of duty, and not just when one member dies. I see this constantly. It's awesome to see. I have seen how a Mott's kid can get taken to the hospital and that family gets overwhelmed with food to the point that they don't have more room in their freezer. Amazing, amazing way that this community will step up for someone in need. I have seen a small group take care of a member who has been out of a job for a really long time. This kind of thing happens here, and it often goes under the radar. Not a lot of people will hear about it. That's probably the way that it should happen. Good on you. Way to go. Keep up the good work. That's what this is about. That's what Nehemiah is aiming for. The things that happen here that I'm talking about right now would make Nehemiah proud. So well done. Let's not stop doing good. During the siege at Minas Tirith, when the battle for Middle Earth is at its peak, its strongest warrior was Aragorn, son of Arathorn. You see him there. And he steps out of the battle and goes back into the city because one guy was sick and needed healing. That just doesn't make sense to me. Where he was needed was out on the battlefield. Where he was needed was at the wall. And what he does is he has more compassion for this one guy who needs help and who needs healing. So he goes back in and he rescues and heals that one guy first. When the enemy is bearing down, there was still something more important to him, because compassion for the weak is not to be underestimated. Nehemiah could have focused on the wall and he could have focused on his enemies, but he knew he was his brother's keeper. And the community realized that, and they pulled together, and it made all the difference because the community survives because of that. May that same thing happen here with us. Let's pray. Lord, you've made us an interdependent people. We need not only you, but each other as well. As we come to know and love and respect you more, may these cause us to grow in our care and our compassion for those whom you love, so that we may look more like Christ every day. Amen.